Okay. All right, good. So we missed, we didn't have last week, and we're discussing the life of the tzaddik, the Rebbe Bona from Pshischa, and we have Baruch Hashem over here. We have a veritable treasure house of stories of Maisim. So we're gonna have Baruch Hashem. You don't see it?
No.
Oh, I have to get that. So tell him to wait. I'll be in a second. Read something from there. I'm sorry. the most fascinating, probably the most fascinating aspect of the life of the Rebbe Rabbonim was the fact that he led a double life, not chas v'shalom in any way that it's normally meant these days, but he experienced different stages in his life. He began, as we learned, he began as a anything but a Hasidic Rebbe, and we have some information about the years before he became a Rebbe. Even though, as I said, he was extremely learned, and he studied back in Austria, in Germany, and he returned as a person who was completely proficient in all of Torah and all of Shas, Torah Shebachsav, Torah Shebalpeh, Bavli, Yerushalmi, and so on. However, for reasons that we're going to begin to understand a little bit more about tonight, the Rebbe chose to be involved in a profession. Ultimately, he was going to be a pharmacist in his last stab at earning a living before he became a Rebbe. All during this time, he was going back and forth to see the tzaddikim, to go to Lublin, to go to Moshe Leib Sassover and others. His ways are extremely, extremely hidden. And what we do know, and some of the stories that I'm going to share with you tonight's going to be almost completely dedicated to telling stories. And again, I apologize, and we're going to start to learn the Torahs in a few. I'm not apologize. We're going to start to learn the Torahs in a few weeks, but to understand the Torahs of the Tzaddik, we have to understand what he experienced and what he was trying to accomplish. It's clear from the many stories that we have, and we'll do a few examples of those, that he was really a businessman in disguise. That he was clearly not. In it for the profit, and he went in a poor man and he left a poor man. It wasn't the business, it was the unusual occurrences along the way and the people that he was able to meet and the Jews that he was able to bring back during those years. Hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of people were brought back to Hashem as a result of the journeys, the voyages of the Rebbe Rabbonim, and where he ended up in these unusual places where we're certainly far from any center of Torah learning. And we're going to go through some of these maisim together, some stories, and get an idea of exactly what it was that was going on. Let's begin. His earliest position was managing some business in the Polish city of Siedlec, which later on became a very important Hasidic center of his students. In Siedlec, for a certain Reb Kalman Siedlecer, the Rebbe Rabbonim was managing his business. The manner of dress, I told you that the Rebbe Rabbonim at the time dressed in German clothing, did not dress in Hasidic clothing, although it's quite clear that he did go with a beard and payas, and in that way he resembled a Polish Jew, but in every other respect he dressed and he spoke like a German Jew. And during this time, it happened once that while he was in Siedlec, he was staying by this Reb Kalman for whom he was managing the business. And once on a Friday night, when Reb Kalman was coming back from shul, when Reb Kalman and Reb Rabbonim came back from shul, so Reb Rabbonim went into his room, and it was taking him a long time. He didn't come out to eat. Reb Kalman did not want to bother him. Remember, at this point, the Rebbe Rabbonim was not known to be a tzaddik. He was just known to be strange. But he was not known to be a tzaddik. So Reb Kalman did not want to interrupt, but his wife was getting fed up with waiting for Kiddush, and she, without asking, she barged into the room, and she was shocked to discover that Rabbunim was wearing the white clothing of Shabbos, which was the way that tzaddikim in the earlier days dressed completely in white, and he was covered with a talis. And she ran out of the room, and she went back, and she told her husband, and her husband Rab Kalman, who knew that he was really a great tzaddik, and that's why he kept him with him. He warned her not to ever question again or to ask any questions bechlal about the behavior of the Rebbe Bunim. So at that early time in Shedlitz, he was clearly leading this double life. On the one hand, he was a businessman, but in the secrecy of his room, he was already beginning his career as a sort of a lonely tzaddik that was davening mostly for the people that he was meeting. Let's learn some examples of these encounters. There was at that time a certain person that was in town by the name of Rav Moshe Fishel. This Rav Moshe Fishel loved nothing more in the world than playing cards. That was his life, was playing cards. And it once happened that, again, much to the chagrin of Rav Kalman's wife, the Rebbe Rabunim brought back this Rav Moshe Fishel with him and told the wife that this is my friend and we play cards together. We enjoy playing cards together. So he asked that they bring a deck of cards. This is a very famous story. And this Moshe official was playing together with the Rebbe Rabunim they were playing for money. They were gambling. They were playing cards for money. And this is going on for around an hour or so. And he was doing okay, the Moshe official, the gambler, and he wanted to leave. You know, it's usually, I guess, it's best to leave when you're ahead. Rebbe Bunim said, "No, this is not the way we work over here. Let's play a little bit more." And Rebbe Moshe Fishel said, "I really have to go." And the Rebbe Bunim insisted that they play. And this went on for another 3 hours that they were playing cards. And this was something that upset Rebbe Kalman's wife. And again, Rebbe Kalman said not to say anything about it. And in the end, the Rebbe Bunim lost money. And it was a card game that was well over 4 hours. Anyway, some time passed by. And in the meantime, the Rebbe Rabunim moved to Pshischa, and he became the famous Rebbe Rabunim. But you know how it is with people, that people tend to remember everything from the past when it comes to things that are not always so positive. So it happened that many Hasidim from Shedlitz came to be by the Rebbe Rabunim of Pshischa. They became his Hasidim, Pshischa. And the Rebbe Rabunim said to them, "You're from Shedlitz, do me a favor. Do me a favor. There's in your town, there's a Jew by the name of Moshe Fishel, who is a good card player. He's a good card player. And please tell him that I know that he has been making fun of me and the Hasidim, because he remembers it was just a short time ago that we actually played together 4 hours one night. And now he's laughing and wondering, what kind of a Rebbe am I that he himself was playing cards with an entire night. And now, a few months later, you know, the Rebbe Rabunim." So he said, tell Moshe official that I know what he's thinking and give him a simon and tell him the following sign. That night that he agreed to play with me, that he agreed to play cards with me, I asked him, I invite him to play cards. That night, he was planning to do an aveira with a woman of the following name. And he gave the name of the woman from some other town. And he had it all worked out and planned out. And since he was a very big gambler, he couldn't turn down my offer to play a little bit, cards. And then when he wanted to leave at the end of that hour or whatever it was, or 2 hours, I realized that aveira was still going. He still had the taiva, the desire to carry out that aveira, and he was still intent on going ahead with it. and that person was still waiting. Therefore, I had to keep him for the second half of the game, to continue to prolong the game, that by that time, both his taiva had left him, and so did that individual leave the place, leave town. And send Rav Moshe Fishel my regards. And that was the ma'isa. That was the ma'isa. So on the simplest level, it's brought down this from that on the simplest level, the Rebbe Rabbunim was trying to help Jews out just on that, without even being makar of the person, just to try to make sure that he would stay in line. again, some very, very interesting, some really remarkable mises. The business that the Rebbe had during this time also was managing some of the schayra of this Reb Kalman, and there was a law in those days that all the meches had to be paid. The taxes were paid to the government, and once the taxes were paid, there had to be a certain tag that was placed on all of the merchandise to indicate that this was merchandise that the fellow had already paid taxes for, and he's allowed to sell it. So everything in the shop had to be tagged with this official government tag. And they used to send inspectors around to make sure that everything was properly tagged. And if not, I mean, it wasn't the question of a penalty. It was that you were taken away, you thrown into jail, and very often you'd be killed. It was a serious business. So what happened is that one time, the Rebbe Rabbunim was a little late. He was a little bit of a batlin with these things, and he did not take care of getting from the office the proper tags. He was missing some tags for a couple of the items, and unfortunately, there was a spot check that was made, and they came from the government with a couple of soldiers. And in general, they enjoyed doing this when it came to Jewish merchants, and they came into the Rebbe Rabbunim's business, and the Rebbetzin Rivkele, in Yiddish, called over to her husband saying, "You're a chacham, you're a smart person, and b'sakana gedayla anachnu, we're in great danger, do something." You know, the soldiers are starting to, there was a fairly large place, and the soldiers are starting to look around, and they have schayra that's not tagged. They have stuff that was not tagged. And the Rebbe Bunim said, you're right, I have to do something. And he went into the room. And she's waiting. These fellows are walking around. She figures he's coming out with some sort of an eitzah to do something. And nothing is happening. It was amazing. It was like we learned in the last parasha, you know, hikub sanveirim, that they couldn't see anything by the doorway. So the soldiers, even though there's a whole group of them, the police and the soldiers did not notice that corner where there was unmarked merchandise, and they apologized very much to the Rebbetzin, Rivkele, and they said, "No, we're sorry, but this is our job," and they left, and she couldn't believe the mazel, and she didn't, in the meantime, she didn't know what happened to her husband, like he chickened that, he left her with those guys, and she didn't know where Rabbunim was, so she opened the door to the room, and Rabbunim was sitting there with the Gemara in his hand, and when she walked in, he was screaming out, "Ay!" Baruch Hashem, now I understand the Pshat and Tosfos. And he was learning a page of Gemara with Tosfos. And he said, now it's very clear. So she was very, very shocked and very disturbed by this. Is that why you went into the room and you left me with these police? I could have been taken off to jail and who knows what. And I thought you were going to help me. Instead, you come in here and you open a Gemara and you're learning. So this is what he answered. This is what it says in the Sefer. Tamini, you should know, believe me, that I'm having problems with this Tosfos ready for 3 weeks. I haven't understood properly this Tosfos in the Gemara. And when the Rishoyim came, when the soldiers came, and they were seeking to hurt me, so I said inside my heart, this is Amarti believe, Behine Ulai Zehais Vazman Anochen, maybe now is the time that I'll be able to properly understand Tosfos. When I saw that everything else is pretty much lost, and we're in big trouble, so I thought that maybe now I'd be able to understand Tosfos. And Baruch Hashem, I was able to learn and to understand Tosfos. So she said, "How could you? Why would you think that that's the? Why is that a good time? to learn Tosfos. And why did you feel that that was the opportunity to learn Tosfos? So he said, well, it says clearly in Tehillim. Listen to this in Tehillim. It says, in Kuf Yutes Tzadikein, a long capital of Tehillim, it says, Li Kivu Rishoyim Labdeini, that the wicked have sought to destroy me, Edosecha Esbonon, and I will look into your Torah, I will study your laws. That's what it says in Pasuk. Li Kivu Rishoyim Labdeini, the wicked are trying to destroy me. So what's the Eitzah? There's only one Eitzah. There's only one thing to do. Edosecha Esbonon, I will look into your Torah, I will study your Torah. So David Malch was teaching us that at a time that you see, God forbid, that you're in danger, and it looks like there's no hope, and the Rishoyim are going to destroy you, the wicked are going to destroy you, that is a time where you're going to be able to understand anything in Torah that you couldn't understand until that time, if you're able to focus and concentrate, and you will have, you will be saved, you will have Hatzalah, you'll be saved from the Rishoyim as well. These are some of the business adventures, things that were going on with the Rebbe Abunim. The business that he became involved in was shipping the lumber business, shipping lumber for the famous Tzadekis Temeril, which we're going to talk a lot about her maybe in 2 weeks or so. This is, I mentioned the name of this woman, Berikson, who single-handedly was supporting all the Rebbes, all the Tzadikim in Poland before they became Tzadikim. And after they established her courts, this was a fabulously wealthy woman, an extremely, extremely great tzaddikus. There are many stories about her as well. And she took upon herself to support the different tzaddikim throughout Poland. So before he wanted to be known as a Rebbe and begin his work, he worked at managing some businesses for this tzaddikus Tamril and was often involved in taking lumber, shipping lumber from Poland all the way to the northern part of Poland to the city of Danzig. And then in Danzig they had these huge fairs, and the Rebbe Rebunim used to manage the business of taking all these things and bringing them safely to Danzig and selling them at the fair to different merchants that were coming from all over Europe. I'm going to share with you a story that's here in the Svarim about what kind of avoida, what was the real work of the Rebbe Rebunim when he was going to Danzig with tons of lumber. That's basically, he was in charge of selling this lumber. We'll talk about the story that tells us about what was his real avoida and what was he working on in his tefillahs during that time. And again, I'm hoping just through these stories that we'll get a clear picture of what kind of a person we're talking about. There's a story that's told that at that time that he was going with Temeril's lumber, the person that there was one particular person, Reb Yankel, that was in charge of everything, of this project. And there was a person who was assigned to go with the Rebbe Rebunim and to help in delivering this shipment and to try to sell the lumber. That year, it seems, was a particularly, particularly difficult year, and business was not good. This pakid, this manager that was sent with the Rebbe Rebunim was a Jew, and he was a religious Jew, but he had problems with Rebbe Rebunim. What were his problems? So it's brought down that he said to Rebunim, Yedidi, my friend, Hayakar, my precious friend Rebunim, Mila de Chasidus laholchem biyachad and Mila de Mischa. You have a problem, Rebunim. You get mixed up. You're mixing together Chasidus and business. You're mixing together the two. And they don't belong together. Therefore, he says, I'm asking you, Heyos shvanach lutshrichim lahagia maher ma'id ledanzig, since we're in a hurry to get to our destination, to Danzig, In order to get to the fair on time and to make at least, if we can, a couple of sales, I'm begging of you, don't delay, don't cause us to be delayed and postpone things because of your chassidish ma'isim, your chassidish zachen. Those with long davening and with the learning and the finyanim, don't get us stuck along the way. I already heard about these things that you do, and I'd like to move at a quick pace so that we get there on time. And the Rebbe Rebunim said, I'll do what I can. Anyway, this was quite a distance from Pshiska to Danzig. It's a long trip, you know, across Poland. And there were, obviously, the means of transportation in those days was very slow. And many stops had to be made and spend different nights in hotels along the way. It happened that that one of the first stops, they came to a certain town, and there was a hotel there, they ate and they rested, and it was time to move on. And the fellow that was assigned to work with the Rebbe Bunim was anxious to move on, and the Rebbe Bunim said to him, "Chashvani shekedai livdeges amakam. I think we have to check around this place a little bit. Ulai gar kan eze Yehudi shetzorach lazal. I think there might be a Jew that lives here that needs some help." So the reaction of the fellow was, "Halo sikam do beinenu. We made an agreement. We made an agreement. Shalinar chsidus be business." Unfortunately, a lot of people still think like that. We're not going to mix together the chsidus with the business. And he says, "And you know that we're going to lose a lot of money if we don't move ahead and get to Danzig on time for the fair." So Rabunim says, "B'chalayfin, my heart is telling me that there's something that we need to do here, and I can't go yet." And this fellow was getting extremely upset, but he had no choice. And Rabunim says, "What? Instead of being upset, why don't you come look and see if we could find the Jew over here?" So he went with Rabunim. They're looking around, like the little village over there, and they're looking around and asking people. And then they came to some place, and the Rebunim is standing outside, and he starts to smell like a hound dog. And he says, "There's a Yid over here. There's a Jew in this place." And they walk into this place, and they found lying in bed a Jew who was deathly ill, and he was crying about his sickness, and he had no one to help him, and he had sorrows. So the Rebunim said that I'll go and try to help you, and he went out. And the whole way this guy is coming running after him and saying, "What are you doing? We have to get going. We'll try to find a doctor to send it to him. What do you need to get involved?" And the Rebbe Bunim just went into the forest. And this is one of the times the Rebbe Bunim said that he was answered immediately. He went into the forest. We know this because the story was told by that pakid, by that manager who was there with the Rebbe Bunim. And he went there and he went into the forest and he gave his scream. And he said, "Rebbe Shalom, this Jew is sick. He's somebody that can help a lot with different dinyanim in the future. And therefore, I'm asking you, Hashem, I'm begging you that you should send him a refuah and all good things immediately." Now, Rebbe Bunim said this is one of the three times that he asked for something immediately and he was answered. So that's what he did. And then, they went back, and by the time they got back to the fellow's apartment, he was already standing on his feet and he was feeling much better. He was a very poor person, so the Rebbe Bunim and the other fellow gave him a nice little bit of money to help hold him over a little bit, and then they parted and continued on their way. Now, in the meantime, what happened to this particular Jew, and just to get an idea of what Rebbe Bunim was accomplishing on his journeys, what happened to this person was that some time went by, and his parnasa, this fellow who the Rebbe helped, was in very bad shape financially, and his job was that he used to go and cut trees. He was a lumberjack. That's how he made his couple of pennies every now and then, and it once happened that he was in the forest doing his business, and he saw there what appeared to be a young man, not Jewish, judging by his clothing and so on, and he was lying on the ground, filthy from head to toe and bleeding. And apparently he was attacked by some animal. He was hurt very, very badly, and he was left for dead by himself in the forest. And he asked, he heard some noise, and he said, "Please help me." And our friend here, this Moshe, this Jew, so he has a compassionate heart, and he lifted up the boy. He was a strong fellow. And he lifted up the boy, and he carried him on his shoulders back to his little apartment, and he fed him, and he showered, he gave him a bath, and he gave him some clean clothing, and so on. And the young man had some money with him, and he gave a ruble to Moshe, and Moshe hadn't seen a ruble, you know, in years. He hadn't seen such a beautiful thing. And the fellow, the boy, said, you know, I could use a drink. How about you? You know, he's feeling a little bit better. He needs, you know, he needs a drink. So Moshe said, okay, sounds good. And the two of them, Moshe with his new friend, they went marching off to the kretschmer, to the bar. And when Moshe comes in and he takes out this ruble, everybody in the bar, you know, they knew this Moshe to be a big, you know, schlapper. So he took out a ruble and he puts it on the counter and he's ordering not only for himself, he ordered for the whole chevra, like drinks. And the owner there, the non-Jewish owner of the kretschmer says, they used to call all Jews in Poland Moshke. Made no difference what your name was. You were always Moshke. Every Jew was called Moshke. So he said, Moshke, what happened to you? Moshke, you won the lottery or something? They used to have also in those days. Like, he says, where did you get your hands on a ruble and you're treating everybody to drinks? See, he was a very, very honest person. He probably shouldn't have done this, but Lamaise worked out okay for him. He told right away the whole story. He said, you see, this is my friend over here. He's not Jewish also, he says. And I don't know who he is. But he's very sweet. I found him for dead in the forest. And what is a person? It's Rachmanis, a boy. And I took him home and I helped him out. Turns out he had a ruble for me. So I thought it'd be nice to treat all my friends to a drink. So the owner of the kretschmer said to the boy, what's your name? He said his name. And the guy turned white and he said, Moshke, do you know who this is, this kid? Someone says, no, I don't know. He said, for the last 3 days, this is the son of the pirates, of the landowner from the whole district, the multimillionaire of the whole district who owns the whole part of the country, that his son was on some hunting trip or something. He was lost for the last 3 days. And there are notices all over the country. There are soldiers and it's not looking for this kid. And you found him. So Moshe says, oh, that's good. That's nice. In the meantime, what happened is that the fellow happened to be a nice guy, the owner of the kretschmer, and he got onto his horse and he went over to the mansion of the pirates, and he told him that I know where your son is. There's a Jew that found your son, and the pirates, the landowner, came there with some chevra in chariots, and he went running there, and he runs in and he sees his son, and it's amazing. It's an interesting thing. He went to the bar before he went home. The kid. Just to take note of that, of what life was like in Poland in those days, and it hasn't changed much from what I understand. So the father goes over and he's kissing and hugging him, and the guy's wife, the mom is crying, I can't believe it, are you okay? So the kid said, yeah, Moshke, here's my friend, he saved me. And Moshke's standing there like, you know, he doesn't know what, you never know what's going to be. You know, he doesn't know whether he was going to be killed or he was going to be hugged. He wasn't sure what's going to happen over here. But the fellow was very grateful to Paris, the landowner, and he took out from his pocket 100 rubles, and the whole place is watching. What a day for Moshe. Takes out 100 rubles here, and he puts it on the table, and he says, Moshke, you saved my son. Please take this and enjoy it. So Moshke's very nervous, and he says, thank you very much, and he's really thrilled. The kid, however, the boy, says to his father, I can't believe it. That's what my life is worth? 100 rubles, that's it? This man carried me on his back for miles. He fed me, he bathed me like a baby, he took care of me, and that's what it is, 100 rubles? And the wife said, yeah, what kind of thing is that, 100 rubles? That's not what our child is only worth, 100 rubles. So the father, the pirates, the landowner said, so what should I give Moshke? How much do you think is a fair amount that I should pay for your life? So he said, listen, he says, father, I was in Moshke's house. He says, it's terrible, it's disgusting. I have an idea. Build for Moshke over here that he should have the money to build for himself a business, a hotel and a bar, a new place. To build in this area, over here, to build a new place. And I think that would be a fitting reward, so he'll be able to earn a living, not just have 100 rubles and to spend it, but he'll have something he'll be able to have to make a panos, to make a living the rest of his life. And the pirates was a generous person and very wealthy, and he was very grateful. And that's exactly what happened. The pirates ordered a whole crew of workers came, and within a few weeks, this guy had the most luxurious place in the entire district. This is what happened to this little Jew that the Rebbe Bunim asked, he davened that he should have a yeshua. So things are going okay. Now what happened in the meantime to Rebbe Bunim? Let's switch over to Danzig, which now is Gdansk, it's called now. What happened over there? So finally they made it. They made it to Danzig. And it was a very, very bad maisa that year. It was impossible to get rid of the merchandise, and they were in danger of getting stuck with a huge, huge amount of stuff that they had schlepped all this time, all the way from Shischa, and there was really nothing to do except to daven. So the Rebbe Bunim went to Bes Medrash, and he davened that Hakadosh Baruch Hu. The Rebbe Bunim said this part over. This we have ready from Rebbe Bunim himself. That the Rebbe Bunim davened, that the Tzedekes Temeral sent him all this way, and his other boss, Rabbi Yankel, sent him, and they're good people. And it's Rachmanis, how could it be that he should come home with this terrible loss of money for these good Jews? In the meantime, after he finished davening, he was learning for an hour or two. So the Rebbe Bunim came back to his hotel. And a certain soicher, a certain wealthy businessman had come from England who was interested in, he came looking to buy wood. So the Rebbe Bunim was told that there's a rich guy from England that might be interested in buying something. And as a good businessman, he went to try to speak to this English fellow to see if he could interest him in buying some things. And when he got there, there was this English guy's had an accountant with him who was sitting in and like crying over 10 books of accounts that were open. And Rebbe Bunim went over to him and asked him nicely in German, "What's wrong?" You know, Rebbe Bunim was a very soft-hearted person. He says, what's bothering you? Why are you crying?" So he said, "You know, there's terrible, terrible problems here. I'm going through the books for the last 2 days. And something is terribly wrong. It's all messed up. And I'm going to get in trouble, and our business is going to be destroyed because of something that's wrong here." So the Rebbe Bunim said, "You know what? Let me take a look at it. I'm pretty good at math." And the Rebbe Bunim took the books and he looked at them for between 2 or 3 minutes. He looked at all of the books and he pointed out to him exactly what had gone wrong in different places with the mathematics and what was overlooked and so on. And the guy ran into his boss, this Englishman, and he said, "There's some man of God over here that he worked out all the cheshbainis. Everything is worked out. Everything is figured out." And the man asked the wealthy fellow asked Rebbe Bunim, "What are you doing? Who are you? What are you doing here?" So he says, "I'm a Jew that I come from Shischa, and I work for so and so, and I came with this a certain amount of tons of lumber. And the business is not good. That's why I'm here." And the man said, "You know, look, I came here to buy lumber and you're here to sell the lumber." So in the end, they worked out a deal, and the Rebbe Bunim got it for an extremely, extremely, good price. He got it for a very good price. And sure enough, the deal was made, and it was a huge profit for his boss, the Tzedekes Temeral. He's on his way back, and now the guy that was going with him is in a great mood, because it worked out, and everybody's gonna make a lot of money. And the way back, but the Rebbe Bunim says, "You know what? I want to stop off there and see how Moshe is doing. Remember that year that we found he was almost dead, and I davened for him. I want to see if he's okay and whatever happened to him." So the Rebbe Bunim, so this guy was already now who's okay with that, and they went to that little village, and they come there and they see this this beautiful hotel over there that was built, and the Rebbe Bunim was wondering what happened, and they went in, and they see that Moshe is standing behind the counter talking to customers, in a fancy suit, and he's talking to customers. So the Rebbe Bunim comes in, and the Yid looks up, and he sees the Rebbe Bunim, and he runs over, and he starts hugging him, and the other Yid, they're all kissing and crying. and Rebbe Bunim said, "What happened to you?" So he told him over the entire Maaseh, that after you left, the business with that child, and the Rebbe Bunim said that, "Baruch Hashem, this is one of those times that I was answered immediately." And the Rebbe Bunim said to the Chassidim that this Jew single-handedly supported over 1,000 other Jews. Single-handedly supported over 1,000 Jews. From that time, he said to the Pakid, to the guy that was with him, "You never know, you find a Yid someplace, and you do a Torah for a Jew, you do him a favor, you don't know how many other Jews are going to get favors from the Jew that you help. So this is another example of a story of the journeys of the Rebbe Bunim when he was a businessman. Let's continue with some other interesting things that happened when he was working for the Tzedekis Temeral. This is one of the stories that would cause, you remember I told you we're going to talk much more about this, that the Tzaddikim of Galicia were not fond of Reb Bunim. One of the reasons that initially, of course later on everybody became his followers, but initially we're going to talk a lot about the Hisnagdus. There were problems. One of the reasons was his German background and way of dressing, and the fact that before he became a Rebbe he was in business, but also because there were rumors that were true, that the Rebbe of Bunim had played cards with people and chess with all types of characters, and we even have two stories of that are connected to the Rebbe Bunim and the theater. That's what we're going to talk about now. They have to realize that nowadays people take it for granted, although they shouldn't, but they take it for granted. There's nothing wrong with going to see a show. In those days, there was a clear difference between the God-fearing Jews who would never step near anything like that, and the ones who were called more of the enlightened type that were frequenting these places. So it happened that that one time when he was working for the Tzedekis Temeral, so he was with a group of German Jews in one hotel, and he had been there for some time, working on a certain business deal, and the other German Jews that were there, they were always trying to sort of get him out to go out with him on town, you know, to have a nice time. And they felt that that he's just always sitting. Whenever he got back from work, he would just sit and learn all the time and daven. And that's the guys after a hard day's work, and they were on the road. They wanted to go out and enjoy themselves. So they would come all the time to ask Reb Bunim. Reb Bunim would always say, "Thank you very much. It's okay. I'm tired. I'm going to learn a little bit." So it happened once that they asked. They said they're going to the theater. And they were begging him to come with them to the theater, and again he refused. When they came back, when these German Jews came back from the theater to the hotel, and the Rebbe Bunim, of course, was still learning, they said to Rebbe Bunim, you sit here with your books, and we go to town, and we go to the theater, and we see the most unbelievable sights, the most remarkable shows that you could possibly imagine. So the Rebbe Bunim says, "I know exactly what you saw in the show. I know exactly what the show is about." So they start to laugh, and they said, "How do you know what the show was? You weren't there. You were never in the theater." So the Rebbe Bunim said, "No, I wasn't in the theater, but I saw an advertisement for that show. And judging by the few lines, how they even nowadays they have a few lines. Judging by a couple of the lines that I saw on the street." So I could figure out the play, and this is what happened. This, that. This was the first scene. This was the second scene. This was the third scene. This was the fourth act, fifth act. Told him over a whole Meiser, and the fellow said, "That's absolutely not at all what it's about. You're wrong. I mean, so you all thought he was going to say that's amazing, right?" No, they said that's completely off. It has nothing to do with the play that we saw. So what is the fact that you saw three lines? What is the fact that you saw three lines on the wall? What does that have to do with anything? So the Rebbe said like this: Tishmana oznechem, mashapichem medaber. Listen to what you're saying yourselves. Im kein atem moedem achshiv she'en kol dibyon ben mishirayis a tzadik beinav. You see, they used to torment him. One of the things they tortured the Rebbe Bunim with his chevra was that he used to go see tzaddikim a lot. He was a German Jew, a successful businessman, and he would run off to go see rebbes. And they used to ask him, "Why do you're always reading these books? Why do you have to go to see these rabbis if you're reading the books all the time? Just read the books. You like that? Why do you have to run to rebbes? You don't come with us to the theater." So now the Rebbe said to them, "Do you see? You admit that there's no comparison between just looking at some titles and a couple of words and going to see the thing in person to the show, right? When you see in person, So that's different. So you can't tell just from the, what's it called, over the theater, that thing, the marquee. You can't tell, you know, the blur of the, so by the marquee. You can't tell from the marquee what's the toichen of the show. So you can't see by looking at a safe. You don't see what's the toichen, what's the essence of Torah. You have to go to a tzaddik. So the fellows thought that was a fantastic insight. And the end of the story, of course, the Rebbe Bunim said that he never went to the theater with them, but they ended up going to tzaddikim with him, and they became, and six out of the seven became some of the, he didn't say their names because he didn't think it was right to name who they were, became some of the greatest Talmid Chacham and Hasidim in all of Poland. Another story of the theater, this is the second story that we have received. This was while he was one time in Danzig. He was with a group of Seichrim. He was a group of with a group of other business people who were constantly arguing about religion with him. Jews that were arguing with him about religion, they weren't religious, and they were constantly trying he was constantly trying to bring them back to Hashem or to do tshuva, and they were constantly trying to bring him back to their stuff. Right, he should do tshuva. And this was going on throughout the entire trip, back and forth, for some time. Finally, the leader of the group, and they respected him very much. They knew that he was a great person. The leader said, Rebbe, you know, we made up in our mind, we decided amongst ourselves that if you agree to go with us to the theater today, then we'll start to keep Shabbos. We'll start to keep Shabbos. We'll make a deal. You come with us to see one show. Come to the theater for one show, and we'll keep Shabbos. So the Rebbe Rabunim had a lot of turmoil about this. Like, what's he going to do? He said, "How could I do this?" On the other hand, there's a whole chevra of Yidden that are going to keep Shabbos, and if they keep Shabbos, then they're going to start keeping everything, because Shabbos, of course, is the entrance into Yiddishkeit. And he didn't know, and he figured, you know, he'll have to think of something. He'll like buy time. And he said, "Not okay." So they head off. The guys are thrilled, and they I guess they figured that they would begin him in a new lifestyle, just like he thought that Shabbos is the beginning of a new life for them. They thought that the theater will be a beginning for him, and they'll get out of the deal also eventually. So they headed off. This whole interesting group headed out to the theater, he said, you know what? If you don't mind, I'd just like to stop off. I want to just look something up for a minute. And they waited outside, and he went into the Bis Medrash, and he was davening, and he was learning for more than a couple of minutes, and he was asking Hashem for help. And the guys were getting upset because the show was going to be on soon. And they went into the Bis Medrash, and he's sitting there by the Gemara, and they said, you know, we don't understand. You know, you made a deal, and the show, the play is starting in a couple of minutes, and you're sitting here with the Gemara, and we got to get going. So, okay, so Rabunim said, you're right, and we made a deal, and they go to the theater, and when they get there, they're going to buy tickets, and the Rabunim says the following: Luchuatem retirchushu kartise knisa. Do me a favor, go buy the tickets, and get me my seat, and buy the tickets, and get things ready for me, and then I need a couple of minutes. If you don't mind, I'll come in and join you. Bring me my ticket, and I'll join you. I'm just waiting in the hallway a little bit outside, but you can come afterwards and get me, and I'll come in time for the show. So the fellow said, okay, that's fair. And they got their tickets, and they went to their seats, and they're waiting for the Rebbe Bunim to come. So what happened was, I guess at that point, it seems that the Rebbe Bunim, he was not going to lie. I mean, he told them he's going to come. And he didn't know what to do, and he had been saying Tillim the whole way, and he saw that it's just not, the guys are not backing. He thought that maybe they were going to just change their mind, they wouldn't put him through it, but the guys are all like, you know, with their popcorn, they're ready to go, and it happens that I remember as a kid that we used to sometimes go to, there was this place in Flushing, this RKO, there was a. It was like, it looked like something from the Middle Ages, the movie, the place, it was on Main Street, this huge place, and there was this fountain when you walked in. It was like, it was this whole dramatic thing to get into the movie. I remember it was really spectacular because we used to go to the kids and we used to play over there and before we went in to see a show. So I guess there was some sort of an impressive room leading into the theater, and the Rebbe Rabunim just didn't know what to do. He was beside himself, and he went into a corner and he began to cry. He began to cry, and he was saying Tillim by heart. In the meantime, they put out all the candles. They made it the place dark because they didn't have any electricity, obviously. So they put out the candles and the show's about to begin. And Rebbe Rabunim is davening there in the dark. And all of a sudden, a group of people, actors, walk in white sheets with candles. it might have been Shakespeare for all we know, right? So they walk in white outfit, in white gowns and candles. They're marching in through that, past that room where the Rebbe Rabunim is. They're marching towards, I guess, like, you know, to go through the audience and to go onto the stage with this dramatic entrance into the theater. The Rebbe Rabunim looks up and he sees people with candles and white and kittels, you understand? And he starts to shry, he starts to scream like he was getting killed. He starts to scream. And there was a whole commotion. And the Seichrim, they said, oh no. And they figured something's going on with Bunim. And the place is like, you know, people are wondering what's going on. And, you know, the show must go on. They're going to the stage, but something happened. So the Jews ran out there. And the Rebbe Bunim is as white as those guys that were walking out in the sheets. And they come there. Now they're just worried about him. And they said, what happened to you? What happened? What's wrong? So flat on his back, on his face. And they ask, what's the matter? What happened to you? Everybody inside is having a great time watching the show and you're screaming and yelling like a maniac. What happened to you? And crying. So he was afraid even to look up. And he said, did you see that? So they asked him, see what? He says, he says, it's Mamash Yom Kippur over here. I was really getting ready to come in. I know I promised I was going to come in. And all of a sudden I saw like Malachim with candles. Walking over here in the dark, Mamash Yom Kippur, he said, and don't you see that Hashem Yisbarach is telling us that it's Yom Kippur, that it's our day of death, and the Malacham Avos and the candles. He's crying, and we have to do tshuva. We have to do tshuva. So the Chevah lost the Cheshek to go back, and they were also embarrassed. You know, it was a whole scene. So they picked Rabunim up, and they went with him back to the Bais Medrash. And the Rabunim sat with them. He told over the Maaser Rabunim. He sat with them the entire night and spoke to them. Dvarim Hayotzim Nalev, words that came from his heart and entered into their hearts. And the Rabunim said that from this group came out Kimat a minyan of great Hasidim who have children and grandchildren will have that will populate the world with many, many tzaddikim who came out from that evening at the theater that we spent. So that's another Maaser, another story of what the Rebbe Rabunim was doing on his business trips. And these are, we only have a few. But this is the entire purpose. This is the entire purpose of what he was doing. Here's another, listen to this. Now this wouldn't go over well nowadays. Not like any of these other ones would have, but this certainly would not go over well. And we'll finish the Maisim for tonight. When he was working for the Tzedekes Temeral, So the custom was then that when you would agree, the businessman would agree by the big fair, when they would agree on a deal, so they would, the more honorable fellows would not go to a bar, but they would go to a cafe, and they would drink some coffee together, and wish each other mazel and bracha, and so on. That's how they would finish up the deal. So it happened once that Rebbe Bunim finished the deal with some people, and he would also do that. He would also go to the place, and they would serve coffee. Except, of course, he wouldn't take any milk because the milk was not chol v'yisrael. In those days, milk was mamish coming from non-kosher animals. It wasn't just from cow. And you know, you can't rely upon, like now people might rely upon that, but in those days he wouldn't drink any milk, and also he would not look at the waitress. Right? He was an extremely devout person. And he was sitting there with his head the other way, and the woman was very insulted. The waitress was very insulted, and brought him the coffee and said, "Herr so and so, Here's your coffee. And Rabunim had his, he was turned the other way, and he said, thank you very much. Please put it down. Thank you. And she just stood there. And he says, sir, I brought you your coffee. And she starts to go to the around. And Rabunim turns the other way and says, thank you very much. Just please put it down on the table. Thank you. So, at this point, she's already, a mechutzafis, and she's going now the other way. She's playing a game with the Rabunim, and at this point, Rabunim screams out in German, don't you know that I'm a chassid? Don't you know that I'm a chassid? And she got scared, and she dropped the glass of coffee, and everything broke on the floor, and she ran away, she was afraid, and she ran away from the whole maisa. The Rebbe Bunim told us over, and listen how he learned pshat. The Rebbe Bunim says, this is what David HaMelech meant when he said in Tehillim, Pevav, he said this, Shomra Nafshi, Hashem, protect my soul, Ki Chosid Ani, because I'm a Chosid. So the Rebbe Bunim said, the meaning of it is, David HaMelech Bikesh Me Hashem Isbarach. What David HaMelech was asking for was, Rebbe Shalom, Shomra Nafshi, I beg of you, protect me and guard me, Ki Chosid Ani, meaning what? That I shouldn't have to scream out for the rest of my life again in public, Ki Chosid Ani. That I shouldn't have to be in such a position that a woman's going to do this to me again, that I'm going to have to scream out, I'm a chosid, don't you know that I'm a chosid? So this means, Shomra Nafshi, Ki Chosid Ani. Next week, we're going to have a couple of more stories, then we're going to talk about what happened, in the drug business, when he became a pharmacist, and how that went. It's also fascinating how he managed to become a pharmacist without going through the usual courses. We'll see next week that Germany already knew. In order to be a pharmacist in those days to be licensed, you had to know German and Latin. So German was his mama lashon. He grew up with German, and then he was told to learn Latin, and he went into the room, and he came out 3 hours later speaking Latin. He read some books, and he brought somebody in with him who would help him, and then he spoke Latin fluently, and how he became a pharmacist, and some interesting stories that we have from those last few years before he became a Rebbe. And then we're going to talk next week in Mitzvah about the beginning of the period of his being a Rebbe, the Hisnagdus, the opposition to the Rebbe Rabunim, and ultimately the famous wedding, the great chasana of Ustila where there was actually the question was raised whether the chassidus from Pshischa is legitimate or it's not legitimate. And it was one of the most famous Jewish wedding probably that ever took place. And we'll talk about that in Mitzvah next week. Shakaya.